had a safe and relatively conflict-free Thanksgiving. We had an Aries moon for Thanksgiving Day, so tempers were easy to flare if we weren't careful. I know I made it out all right, but I hope the same for all of you. The holiday season is among us, so this is my cute little reminder that I have gift cards available in my shop. You can buy your astro-loving friend or family member a gift card for my services, or tell the people in your life that you'd like a gift card for my services. If you're going to give a gift card this season, why not make it a small business? I also have mythic poems available right now, so get those while they're hot and in stock. It would make a beautiful and personalized gift for the astro-lover in your life. I also just recently put my moon merch back on my website, so that is there. There's stickers, there's a water bottle, there's some hats, there's no clothing right now, but definitely check out all the other little things I got going on in the moon merch shop. That's on my website, moonmattersastrology.com. If you're wanting additional content that doesn't make it to the podcast, then consider becoming a patron. I just recently asked the cuties in the Discord how I can improve on my offerings, and they voted for what additional content people will be getting in the year of 2024. So if you want to join in on that kind of action, then consider becoming a patron. We have a Discord, retrograde guides, new and full moon reminders. The retrograde guides and lunar reminders come with advice from the tarot as well. Patrons also get access to all the additional blog content that doesn't make it to the show. So go ahead and check that out if any of it sounds interesting. And now that we have the business out of the way, let's get into today's episode. Last episode, we did an overview of what palmistry and chiromancy is, a little history, how we can utilize it as a practice of divination and self-discovery, and then I mentioned all the various parts of the palm and how they each play a role in the interpretation. It's not just about lines, just like astrology isn't just about the sun. It's a little more, actually a lot more in-depth than that. We're not even going to be starting with the lines of the palm. I'm actually going to be going over the mounts of the palm first. I want to explore the mounts before the lines because I think the mounts show our astrology really well and they're very astrologically driven. So it's a good place to start because you'll sort of know which mounts will be more prominent just based off of your natal chart. For example, I know from my astrology that I'm very Mars and Jupiter ruled. Mars is the master of my chart, and I have a Mars ruled moon, and Jupiter is in its joy, and I have a Sagittarius stellium. So just based on that, as someone who reads palms, I would suspect that my mount of Jupiter and one of my mounts of Mars would be prominent. Yes, there are two Mars mounts, but let's break down all the mounts in general before I get ahead of myself, because you know I tend to get ahead of myself. I want you to remember that this is an overview. Chiromancy is damn near impossible to teach through a podcast format, but here I am trying to do it. What I'm giving is a template, the hard and fast rules. Just like in astrology, there's a ton of modifiers and mitigating factors that go into reading a palm. I may have a prominent mount of Jupiter, but is my hand flexible or stiff? Is my skin coarse or fine? Is my mental, practical, or physical world more important or more prominent? All of these things and many more are mitigating factors to how we read a palm. Think of all these episodes as the starting base today. This is like our starting point today. And we're talking in generalities and just getting our footing. This is an introduction to the mounts, not a be-all, end-all discussion of them. Just like there are seven traditional planets in astrology, there are seven mounts of the hand. Each one indicates an archetype that the native holds. We all have every archetype contained within us, but they don't all express the same or express all that much sometimes. But we definitely have archetypes that are more front and center, and those typically align with which mounts are the most prominent in our hand. I keep saying mount. Like you all just naturally know what that means. A mount is a fleshy mound on the palm. It's like the little, or not so little, pads of flesh that seem to collect in certain areas of the hand. Fullness and height are indicators of importance or strength, and the strongest mount is usually the dominant archetype. If there's more than one dominant archetype, then we see a blend of those energies, just like we do in astrology. I think that's going to be my catchphrase for palmistry. It's just like astrology, but in the palm of your hand. I think I mentioned last episode that there are also astrological associations with fingers. Jupiter's finger is directly above the mount of Jupiter, Mercury's finger is directly above the mount of Mercury, and so on. I realize we only have 5 fingers and 7 mounts, so we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But just know that the fingers associated with the mount also play a role in judging the archetype as a whole. To explore the basics of the mounts, we're going to begin with our index finger and go counterclockwise. I'll be doing this from the perspective of the right hand because like 85 to 90% of people are right-handed. I'll do my best to remember disclaimers for the lefties or just speak in a way that doesn't really, you know, designate hand. My husband is a Southpaw, so don't even try to come at me and say I don't care about the lefties. So Southpaws, you'll be starting at the index finger and going clockwise instead. To make things a little easier, I'm going to be uploading a picture of my palm with images and markings to go along with these episodes. Feel free to look at them and use them as a guide for your own hand. I think the visual will be super helpful when trying to assess your own palm, so I really recommend taking a look at those. And you can find links to any materials that go along with these episodes in the show notes. All right, let's kick this off with the mount of Jupiter. Remember, we aren't doing a full assessment here. Just getting our bearings with the archetypal anatomy of the hand and getting a baseline understanding of what these mounts can mean. We'll add in all the mitigating factors later. Right now, we're just getting that base layer. I'll be going over how to do a quick assessment of each mount, as well as what the archetypal meaning of the mount is. And another thing, don't be afraid to really look at your hand from all angles when assessing a mount. Different lighting, angles, and even just touching your own hand will help you get a better idea of whether the mount is prominent or not. Jupiter. The mount of Jupiter is the fleshy pad right below your index finger. When it's prominent, it won't be shy about showing itself. It is Jupiter after all. If it looks big, then it's big. If it doesn't look super big or it looks flat, then it's not as prominent. Definitely do not overthink this one. If your Jupiter finger or index finger is super strong, crooked, or striking in some way, it can also be an indication that your Jupiter archetype is strong. An average Jupiter finger will reach the middle of the top phalange of the middle finger. If it's much longer or much shorter than that, then you know your archetype is either lessened or heightened. Even lesser archetypes can tell us things about ourselves, so don't discount something just because it's not the loudest voice in the room. If you're looking at my palm, my finger is slightly above average height, somewhat thicker than the other fingers, and the mount is quite noticeable. I have a strong Jupiter, but there are much, much stronger ones out there, so don't be alarmed if yours looks like it's on overdrive compared to mine. When it comes to the archetypal meanings, they're going to sound pretty similar, if not identical, to the astrological meanings, give or take some differences here and there. An archetype is an archetype. The whole function of it is to contain numinous content that's ubiquitous throughout its usage. It's a common thread or motif, so it's always going to mean kind of exactly what it means. The mount of Jupiter speaks to our ambition, drive, spirituality, our confidence, and self-esteem. It also has to do with things like partnerships and unions, and how well you navigate the social or political world. This is actually the mount we'd first look to see what marriage means to someone. Gluttony and overindulgence definitely reside within this mount, and that includes sexual or sensual desires as well. There are absolutely mitigating factors that can indicate issues with overindulgence, especially if this mount is prominent. And if you're looking at just what someone might overindulge in, you would look at, yes, the mitigating factors, but also what other mounts are prominent? You usually have one or two that are super, super prominent. So if you have Jupiter and you have Venus as your prominent mounts, maybe you just love to overindulge in the good life, good food, good sex, all of those things. If it's Mercury, maybe you just talk. Maybe you can't be quiet. You like to talk. You like to think. You constantly consume learning material. So this is how you kind of blend what your two main archetypes are. That's an example of that. This mount shows us our pride and the way we command ourselves and others. It's an archetype of leadership and authority, so it reveals if you're a benevolent leader, an iron fist leader, or honestly, you don't want to lead at all. A strong Jupiter mount will be ambitious, lively, and always looking for ways to assert their energy into the world. There's a natural leadership that we see with this mount, even if the person doesn't necessarily want it. I'd be remiss if I left out the generosity portion of this archetype. When in good standing, Jupiter is known for being extremely giving and of a highly benefic nature. Regardless of the mitigating factors, when we look at the mount of Jupiter, we're looking at someone's spiritual nature, their ambitions, and their benevolence for the people around them. This mount is how much a person stands out, their affinity for standing out, and how they conduct themselves in social situations. This is also a love of mankind and nature as a whole. If you're wanting to judge individuality, self-esteem, and leadership qualities, the mount of Jupiter reigns supreme. Saturn. Saturn and Jupiter are sort of the titans in the sky. Saturn is Jupiter's dad, but Jupiter's bigger than Saturn. It seems like they're always at odds with each other. What one does, the other will reliably do the opposite. The reason I'm highlighting the opposing nature of these two titans is because of how we assess the mount of Saturn. When we're looking for a prominent Jupiter mount, we expect it to be full and fleshy and completely on display. We're looking for exactly the opposite with Saturn. Saturn is the only flat mount of the bunch. We assess this mount differently than all the others. We'll get into Saturn's archetype in a minute, but I think we all know it's about restriction, oppression, boundaries, and crushing responsibility. This means the mount of Saturn is actually flat when it's prominent. If someone has an extremely strong Saturnian archetype, it pervades through all of their being, then sometimes the entire palm can be completely flat. Saturn's like, I'm going to crush all of you. So boom, now the whole palm is flat. Saturn can exert its influence on the palm just like it does in our natal chart. So if you're like, where are all my mounts? I have no idea what you're talking about, Delana. You might have a very strong Saturnian influence that's sort of evening out all of your mounts. The middle finger is Saturn's finger, which I think is really funny, and the mount of Saturn is located directly below it. Since Saturn's mount is flat, it's really important to look at the fingers to determine the strength of this archetype. If your middle finger is high set or has a bit of a crooked bend to it or just crooked in general, Saturn's archetype is likely prominent. My mount of Saturn is rather small. It doesn't have a lot of real estate because of the other mounts around it. It doesn't take up a lot of space. It is flat and it looks just sort of normal. But my middle finger does have a slight bend to it, and there is a mitigating mark on the mount itself that indicates that Saturn is strong. My natal Saturn is domiciled and in an angular house, so I do have Saturn as kind of a presence in my life, but as my palm suggests, it's not an overly dominant force. It just makes itself known, and it's steady, which is actually kind of nice for me with all my Jupiter energy. Those two titans kind of balance each other out. I had mentioned that Saturn is Jupiter's dad, and if you listen to this podcast, you've definitely heard that one before. So when it comes to the archetype of Saturn, we can see overbearing father energy. There's a serious and hardworking tone to everything Saturn does. Nothing in this world comes for free, and Saturn pretty much trademarked that motto. While Saturn restricts, confines, and often oppresses, it's also cautious, economical, and shrewd. Saturn can often indicate depression and melancholy tendencies, but it also brings about the will to do things that need done in life. The ultimate placement of responsibility, that's Saturn. Without Saturn, the world would not turn as efficiently as it does because no one would be doing the grunt work or laying the foundations for success. Saturn's archetype is often one that's seen as being alone. Again, depression and isolation belong to the archetype of Saturn, which is exactly the opposite of Jupiter. Where Saturn and Jupiter do cross paths is on the topic of wisdom. They both like to indulge in philosophical thinking. Where they diverge again is that Jupiter just seems to fall into wisdom through experience, and Saturn is about the scholarly pursuit of wisdom, the textbook traditional way of wisdom. This archetype carries the weight of the world. The tarot card associated with Saturn is literally the world. And I don't want to sugarcoat Saturn's archetype too much because it would really be doing the archetype a disservice. As humans, we don't like the malefics because they bring out unpreferred human experiences. Nobody wants to experience isolation, work without reward, darkness, or the obstacles of fate. but they're part of life here as a human. I think looking at the myth of Saturn will also showcase that even Saturn couldn't evade fates, like his fated hardships. Saturn was all worried about the prophecy that one of his children would kill him, so he figured he'd cheat fate by eating all his kids. And we know his attempt was futile because Jupiter was hidden away, and when he was old enough, he came on the scene, and then he killed his dad, and he set all his brothers and sisters free. So Saturn knows better than anyone that fate has hard lessons to teach us, and this archetype takes up the mantle of instilling karmic lessons. As a Stoic, I can choose to see Saturn in a productive light. Rather than being a restriction or an oppressing force, I can choose to take the lessons of Saturn and know that through hardship, I will be formed into a stronger, more resilient version of myself. I trust that fate makes no mistakes, and Saturn, being the bringer of fate, makes him a messenger, and we all know that you don't shoot the messenger. The Sun. Apollo's mount represents the sun, our solar life force, so as you hear me say Apollo, just know I'm talking about the sun. The mount of Apollo goes back to being like Jupiter in that it's full and fleshy if it's prominent. The interesting thing about this mount, though, is that more often than not, we see it as a double mount. If you're looking at the graphic of my hand, I put the sun right between the middle of the two mounts that create the mount of Apollo. To assess this mount, it's really helpful to view your palm at eye level so you can really see the topography of it. So stretch your hand out flat and then raise it up to your eye level and you'll see the mounts from a different angle. The mount of Apollo will really benefit from this view. Honestly, all of them will. You should just look at your hand again in all kinds of ways and even feel your hand. Try to feel the valley between the two mounts for the mount of Apollo. These mounts will be fleshy and full when the archetype is strong, but we can also see the mounts take up a lot of space when it's strong. Since this is a double mount, the space between the two mounts can be pretty wide and start encroaching on other mounts' territory. And that's when I said my Saturn mount doesn't really have a lot of space. It's because Apollo and Jupiter are sort of like squeezing in on Saturn's territory. It's possible that this mount can be a single mount, but majority of the time, there will be two mounts with a valley in between. If you don't have a valley, but clearly you're seeing that you have Apollo's mount and it is fleshy, it's okay. It's okay for it to be a single mount, but more often than not, you see it as two mounts with a little valley between. The ring finger is associated with Apollo, the sun. We give it the same judgment as the other fingers. We're looking for bends, length, crooks, or anything that stands out with the finger. Even having a plump or desiccated phalange can indicate a strengthened or weakened archetype. The way my fingers carry themselves is that the Apollo finger always seems to lean towards or gravitate towards my Saturn finger. And this actually means that Saturn is sort of holding up or supporting Apollo. My Sun archetype leans on Saturn's archetype for support, which I think is kind of funny because my Sun is Sagittarius, which is Jupiter ruled. So at the end of the day, it's kind of like Jupiter is still leaning on his dad for support. When I was talking about Jupiter's archetype, you might have thought some of those things should have went with the sun. The sun in chiromancy is much more about creativity, flair, innate talent, and how fun-loving we are, and much less about ego or identity or life assertion. There is certainly a level of egotism that can be seen with this archetype if it's on overdrive, but in general, it's more about how happy-go-lucky we are. The tarot card associated with this archetype helps illustrate the meaning of it. The sun in tarot is all about harmony, goodness, luck, and is the ultimate optimism. How charismatic and entertaining someone is can be seen within the archetype of Apollo. This is because the god Apollo was associated with music and poetry and just drama. Creativity is huge with this archetype. So if it's strong, we can see someone who values their chosen creative avenue greatly. People with strong Apollo archetypes are eternal optimists and bring warmth with them wherever they go. This is the sun's archetype. So when it's strong, we see a natural magnetism. This is the type of person who could convince you to do anything, pull the wallflowers out of their shells, and generally just spread good cheer. All of this charisma can end in spontaneous adventures, which are usually good-natured and harmless. Sometimes the energy can go unchecked and the archetype becomes reckless, but it's never from a place of spite or malice. The sun is always good-natured, even when the outcome isn't what they intended. Intuition is second nature to this archetype. Wisdom isn't something that's typically associated with Apollo, but this archetype can hold its own when it comes to scholarly pursuits, especially if they align with the creative interests or business interests of the person. In general, a strong Apollo archetype will allow someone to shine light wherever they look. It will give them what seems like a charmed and beautiful existence, and that's because the sun is imbued into everything that they do. Mercury. The mount of Mercury is, just like Jupiter, a single mount directly under the pinky, and if it's prominent, then it will be full and fleshy, standing up high. It even has the ability to encroach on the territory of other mounts and push the setting of the pinky forward if very prominent. This is another one that will be helpful to look at your palm from an eye level view. So twist your hand around and look at it from all angles and lighting. The mount of Mercury can span from Apollo's territory all the way to the outer ridge of the palm. And this is another one that if it's prominent, you'll see it pretty readily. The pinky is the finger that belongs to Mercury. A plump pinky or a high-set pinky will be an indicator that Mercury is a dominant archetype. Pinkies are always kind of small. Just like in general, yes, they are the smaller finger. But if yours is extra small or extra tall or just doing something that makes itself stand out in some way, then we know the archetype is either strengthened or diminished. My natal Mercury is in detriment, so my pinky finger is just a little guy and my mount is pretty flat. My pinky finger is even a lot more low set than the other three. The other three fingers are kind of in line with each other, especially Jupiter and Saturn fingers. Those two are like right next to each other. The sun's a little bit lower, but then the pinky finger is a lot lower set. An average pinky height is when the top of the pinky reaches the line separating the first and second phalange of the ring finger. If it's shorter than this, and mine is shorter, then we see some mercurial detriment, which we all know I have a little mercurial detriment to me. It makes me interesting. The mercurial archetype is one that enjoys all things pertaining to the mind, intellect, communication, and general skills. This archetype is of both the mind and body, as Mercury can use both outlets to express itself. Think of someone who's a great athlete and think of someone who's great with words. Both need the finesse of Mercury to navigate those worlds with ease. Because if you're all Mars, sure, you might be good physically, but you could also be really clumsy. You need Mercury's finesse to really be a true good athlete. People with a strong Mercury can be great with money or becoming heavily involved with business. A lessened Mercury archetype can be someone who's bad with money, but also just someone who isn't motivated by money. Mercury is a merchant by nature, so this archetype naturally excels at things business. And for me, in my experience with my detriment, I have always said my whole life I am not money motivated. I understand that we live in a material world, so we must be material girls, and that you have to make money to live. But money at the end of the day is not my pure motivation. And I think that is a lot of what my detriment expresses as. If business isn't your thing, then maybe it's science or problem solving. Mercury likes to indulge in anything that expands the mind and allows the archetype to explore, learn, and gather information. I mentioned communication already, but that one is like the crux of this archetype. We all know that. So gathering information and being able to relay it in a coherent way is really important to the mercurial archetype. The magician is the card of Mercury, which means this archetype is one of manifestation and manipulation. The mercurial archetype can conjure up what it needs when it needs it. This could be money, but it could also be an excuse, a tall tale, or a story. After communication, the biggest part of this archetype is the trickster aspect. When we see someone with a prominent Mercury archetype, they can be tricky, slippery, or just really good at always somehow escaping by the skin of their teeth. The Mercurial archetype has a lust for knowledge and a knack for relaying information. Gossips and thieves thrive right next to statesmen and doctors when it comes to Mercury. It's a fine line between being brilliant and being a crook. At its best, Mercury can teach others and help solve the problems of the world and be a great thinker. At its worst, Mercury is manipulative and a thief, and it knows just how much smarter it is than everyone else. The Moon. The Mount of Luna sits right under the upper Mars Mount. It's the lower corner of your palm on Mercury's side, across from the thumb meat. If the mount is prominent, you'll know it. You'll be looking for a full and fleshy mount that can't be missed. If you're thinking, well, it's not busting out, but it's not like flat, then you likely have a standard mount size, which most people do. The example of my palm is an example of what it's like when Luna's mount is slightly deficient or slightly flat. You can see in the picture of my palm that the upper Mars bulges a little bit, and then it sort of just like stops being so bulgy, and that little corner of my hand kind of bends inward. This is also because this is getting into delineation a little bit, but because I have a Mars ruled moon, my Mars mount and my moon just kind of blend a little bit. There's a weird blending going on there because my moon is Mars ruled, but you can see at the very end where Luna would be prominent, she just kind of gives up a little bit. With the mount of Luna, having it be overly developed can mean the archetype is hard to control. It can be hard for these people to live in the real world, and the real world will often feel harsh to someone with an overly developed Luna. A moderately developed Luna indicates someone who is both emotional and emotionally intelligent. They value all that the human experience has to offer and they take it in stride. A deficient Mount of Luna is someone who lives in the real world and has a hard time tapping into imagination or emotion. And a great example of this for me, as someone who has a slightly deficient Luna, is I was upset about something, or I was allowing myself to finally process some emotion, I will say, about something silly, you know, day-to-day things. And I was speaking with my husband about it, and all I said was, you know, I feel very human right now. And he just had to laugh because he's like, yeah, you are human. Isn't it great? Isn't it great? Like, this is a great reminder that you aren't a robot. You aren't just, you know, processing the world bit by bit. You're not coded in any way. You're a real human with real human emotion. So I thought that was an interesting phrase that came out of my mouth, which was, I feel very human right now. And it was when I was in the throes of my annoyance and anger at something just, you know, minute and very human. The Mount of Luna holds the key to imagination. This mount speaks to our sensitive and psychic nature, as well as how much we value solitude and our propensity for restlessness. As an archetype, Luna is all about intuition. This is creative intuition, love intuition, career intuition. It's mystical and imaginative all around. The archetype of Luna really reminds me of Pisces, which is having one foot in the real world and another in their delusions. The moon in tarot is the card of Pisces and obviously the card of Luna. This indicates a deep need to get lost in emotion and an ability to explore worlds not found in the physical plane. This is a restless and slightly nervous archetype. The moon changes reliably. So whenever someone has an extremely prominent Luna mount, you can always count on the notion that their emotions will be up in the air. People with a strong Luna mount are also typically empaths, or as I like to call them, emotional sponges. They tend to absorb everything around them, the good and the grime. This archetype is easily influenced by what you feed it, so be certain you're giving Luna quality emotional input. That doesn't mean it has to be positive all the time, but the way in which you engage in emotional and intuitive endeavors should be in a quality way. And this is my way of saying form boundaries. People with strong Luna mounts really need to understand their emotional and intuitive boundaries. And they probably don't have many because, again, they're those emotional sponges. So they need to learn that they don't need to soak everything up. And if they can't help it, then they need to learn how to form strong boundaries with people. Music, art, love, and harmony all live within this archetype. The moon knows how to dream and scheme. Having a prominent Luna mount gives free access to the unconscious space within, but it can be easy to get lost in that space, which is why a lot of people with this dominant archetype can be moody, restless, and hard to understand or please. The capacity for love and care reigns supreme, though. These people want everyone to be relaxed, happy, and indulging in what brings them joy. They don't really need others to be happy, as solitude with their trusted few is pretty much all they need. This is not a super social archetype. Again, quality over quantity when the archetype is strong or even just balanced. This is the archetype of the misunderstood artist, the loner, and the lazy dreamer. Luna is built for comfort, not speed. Venus. The mount of Venus is what you heard to me refer as the thumb meat. This mount is right below the thumb and is basically the muscle that controls the thumb. It's the base of the thumb and below the webbing of the lower Mars mount. It's honestly another one that's really hard to miss. Regardless of whether it's prominent or not, this area of the hand is carved out for Venus, and it's really hard to mistake. Venus doesn't have a finger that's associated with it. You could say the thumb is somewhat Venusian, but I liken that more to Mars's territory. When we assess the mount of Venus, we're looking at how full the mount is, as well as how much space or territory there is for the mount. The lifeline of the hand forms a natural boundary for this mount. The lifeline is the large curved line directly next to the mount of Venus. This line forms the territory of the mount. In the picture of my palm, there is quite a large territory for Venus's mount based on where the lifeline is. The next thing we look at is the actual fullness of the mount. Just as with other mounts, we're looking for a full fleshy pad. The mount doesn't have to take up the entirety of the territory given by the lifeline, but it certainly can. This is another one that you can readily see and shouldn't have too tough of a time assessing. If the mount is large, you'll know. If the mount is diminished, you'll know. And if you're wondering whether it's diminished or excessive, then you're likely somewhere in the middle and considered a standard mount. Venus's archetype is the most tender and loving of all the archetypes in the hand. The mount of Venus indicates our levels of compassion, grace, love, beauty, harmony, and joy. This mount truly encompasses all the radiance of Venus. When this archetype is on overdrive, it gives me big Snow White vibes, communing with animals and just generally being a pleasure to be around and loving harmony and balance. This mount has to do with sexuality, but it's not so dirty and primal like Mars is. This is a refined sense of love, pleasure, and sex. This archetype is about peace, harmony, and cooperation at its core. This mount is very relationship driven and often cares more about building relations with people above all else. Even when talking about things like career or material world endeavors, the Venus archetype is always concerned with humankind and fellow man. So if you're someone with a prominent Venus archetype, you care more about building relationships in your career above anything else. You're always going to care about your coworkers or your boss. So you're going to be very involved in making connections with people. Dance, art, poetry, creativity, music, and anything lively and vivacious will be part of the Venusian archetype. Performance of all kinds of art belong to this mount, and when paired with other mounts, we can see how someone expresses their bohemian side. Sometimes this mount appreciates art rather than creates it, so a lesser developed Venus will be someone who consumes art or, again, appreciates art and beauty, rather than creating it themselves. Not everybody is the artist, but sometimes you are the consumer of art. I said that we look to Jupiter for marriage in the hand, and that's true. But of course, Venus has her say. While the mount of Jupiter is the attitude towards commitment, Venus is really the lifeblood. Our mount of Venus shows us the level of play, passion, and romance we require within our intimate relationships. Marriage and union is a natural state for Venus. So the mount really tells us how we move and think in relationships, how we value sex and partnership, and how we consume and create harmony in the world. The Venus archetype can be desirous and lusty, a true siren, or it can be a flowing goddess of love and harmony for all who encounter it. Mars. I put Mars last because it's honestly the oddest of the bunch when it comes to reading the mounts. Mars actually has two separate mounts. And it's not like Apollo, where there's a single mount separated by a valley creating two mounts. It's literally two separate mounts on opposite sides of the palm. Mars also doesn't have an official finger that's associated with it, although the thumb can give us some insight, but still, no official finger for Mars. Mars has a plane of the palm called the Plane of Mars. It begins under the Mount of Jupiter and spans diagonally across, ending between the Mount of Mercury and Luna. So it's underneath Mercury and above Luna. This whole diagonal plane belongs to Mars, and the whole plane must be assessed when looking at the Martian archetype. The plane is divided into three parts, upper, lower, and the plane. The middle plane is super quick to assess because it only speaks to the temper of the native. If the middle plane is padded, raised, and fleshy, then the person has a quick and wild temper. These people can pop off at any given moment. If the middle plane is flat, which it usually is, then the Martian temper is absent, and the native generally can control their emotions and temper. The middle plane is honestly just like the center of the palm for the most part. So unless you have like a big raised mound, or it's just, you know, that plane, that diagonal plane is just busting all the way through, you don't have as bad of a temper as you think you do. If it is, you know, really raised in the middle, especially in the middle there, that's kind of like a hot button. That's exactly what that is, like a button, like boop, okay, I'm mad now. So most people don't have a very prominent plane of Mars, but it's possible. Once the middle plane is assessed, then you have upper and lower Mars mounts, which are the more important ones. The upper Mars mount is underneath Mercury, and the lower Mars mount is underneath Jupiter. The difference between the upper and lower mounts is the type of Martian expression. Upper Mars is much more subtle and preserving. It's sort of an inward thing, while lower Mars is brash and assertive. Most people have a mix of both, but some people will only have one developed side of Mars. It seems on my hand that my lower Mars is much more prominent than my upper Mars, which aligns with my natal retrograde Mars placement. My rage and assertion is much more internal, and I tend to be quietly full of rage, just quietly rageful. Not always the best, but also it helps me hone my energy and channel it productively. Definitely refer to the picture I put in the show notes for this one if you're confused on where upper and lower Mars mounts are. When it comes to the archetype of Mars, I'm going to be speaking as a whole and not break the mounts up between lower and upper. This will keep it simpler for right now, but down the road we'll expand on them separately. Remember, this is just a summary. The tarot card associated with Mars is the Tower. That's all I should really need to say. This is our Tower energy. Our Mars archetype is how we move through the world, destroy the world, consume the world, take what we want from the world. Mars's archetype is filled with fire and lightning. Sometimes that lightning starts the fire. Sometimes the lightning is the kick in the ass we need. And sometimes the fire just plain hurts. Mars is a malefic, so it brings malefic energy to the human experience. Let's not forget that. The mounts of Mars speak to our drive, courage, assertiveness, and resiliency. It's our energetic and sexual nature. This mount really showcases our stamina and vitality. There's also a sexual nature to this mount, as the archetype of Mars is extremely sexual in nature, and it's not sexual like Venus, where, you know, she's prim and proper and beautiful, and I love sex and I'm beautiful, but more primal. This is a very primal, just deep attraction, primal sexuality. Your ability to stay the course and be resilient resides within this mount, and also how honorable you are and how seriously you take your oaths is also seen in this mount. This is the archetype of the warrior, so we get to see how someone fights or doesn't fight. In all, our mounts of Mars show us our capacity for being passionate, persevering, determined, resilient, and even loyal to a degree. How you behave as a human on a basic instinctual level is all indicated in the archetype of Mars. Well, that's the basic overview of the mounts of the palm. It seemed like a lot for an overview, but trust me, we barely scratched the surface with this stuff. Once you understand the mounts and can locate them, then we have to add skin texture, dexterity, color, hair, fingernail shape, size, length, all of that. You also have to look at modifying marks on the mounts themselves and take those mitigating factors into consideration. It's a lot of separate moving parts, but just like with astrology, it becomes second nature once you start putting it into practice. If you want more astrological content before the next episode, consider signing up to become a patron of my work. I have exclusive blog content, monthly horoscopes, retrograde guides, and a Discord waiting for you to join. You could also leave a super awesome review on Spotify or iTunes, which I would be eternally grateful for. People have been leaving reviews and I have been so thankful. So thank you to everyone who's been doing that. Head on over to my website, check it all out, and thank you in advance for supporting me. I'll see all you babes later.